Alan Kring Productions, in association with the Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is International Financial Management, FIL 344, for spring semester 2022.
Lack of a better term, the title of this lecture is Exchange Rate Games. To give you an idea of how complicated the world can get, I know this is going to be a shock to you, but the world has these greedy people in it. I know that's kind of appalling, that those kinds of people are there. And in their greed, they will thwart the intentions of good people. They will take the money of a good person. They will take the property of a good person. And on a scale of countries, they will, if it is profitable, they will help a country that is evil. And I mean evil on the scale of really bad. It's just part of the game. If you can make money, then you're going to do it. One of the aspiring, very bright people in this class of very bright people was asking me after class about black market currencies. And yeah, that is very active. It is a huge market for currencies in a black market kind of way, getting essentially circumventing local currencies that might be weak and getting your hands on dollars for some purpose that might not be particularly nice. Well, where do they get these dollars? Well, they get them from legitimate and semi-legitimate places sometimes, but those dollars then become the stuff of all kinds of awful things. And I want to caution you that you may very well be in that world. And if you are stupid, you are going to question your superiors and be a whistleblower and face the consequences. And I'm talking about money that can be used for, and capital that can be used for arms deals, where those arms end up in the hands of people who just summarily kill villagers. It can end up in drug trafficking markets around the world for things that mess up the lives of addicts in every country you can imagine. It might be money that is flowing for the use of things that would be kind of appalling. Here in academia, I will say it, and if you want to bitch about it to someone, by all means, please do. I'm getting a lot of complaints anymore. You can even have money. Yeah, I had one this semester for someone whose feelings were hurt by a hard quiz, a formal complaint, hearing, the whole nine yards. But here, you can even get money that is flowing in the very large market for pictures of bare little girls. It's all there, and this money can go to very nefarious things. Let me give you an interesting example. And the gentleman who was asking me about that is not allowed to comment on this. And I will tell you the background story. Long ago, back in the 1990s, I was a consultant, and I did anything I could to make a little bit of money in this business. I would be one of the brokers in a chain that would do something absolutely bizarre, like link up an old World War II Soviet-era tank to some country in South America that needed one, for God's sake. A lot of the deals were phony. I mean, you got all these things that would come around. Yeah, there's this stash of gold hidden in the mountains in Switzerland, and there's a broker who wants to get that out of there and get it to some party. It's silly stuff. There's this ginormous ruby. I mean, it was just nonsense. Most of the time, it was stupid stuff that we were medical supplies that were in a warehouse in the middle of nowhere, getting those to some country that needed stuff like that, you know, triage kits, suture kits, stuff like that. And then there were some that were semi-weird, but I mean, you know, you did the stuff that you did, and you made a few, usually there were like 5 to 10 brokers in the chain to connect the buyer with the seller, so you got a little cut of it. There was this one that came to me, and it would seem just absolutely bizarre. And there was an interested party that wanted to convert dollars into peso. Now, that is absolutely, what? Why would you want to convert dollars into pesos? I mean, and this was large numbers of dollars. I mean, and I would not have been able to handle it on my own. I would have to have gone through others, but it was so weird, it just could not possibly. I thought, someone is really having fun playing with a stupid little brokers, and there's got to be a scam going on here somehow. Well, it was a few years, maybe 5 years later, Arthur Anderson was prosecuted for laundering dollars into pesos. It wasn't a joke. It actually was a real deal. And I turned it down because I thought it was a joke. Not because I thought anything was wrong with it, you know, morally, it just was, that couldn't be possible, and then there it was. So now I want you to tell me, and this is where you have to start thinking about international finance in a kind of a broader way. Why would some interested party want to be changing in tranches of $50 million, changing those on about a month to 2 month basis into pesos? Why? Why would that happen? Can you tell me what you think? Because I wasn't smart enough to figure it out. You got anything?
Drug smugglers.
Well, the first word was right. The second one was wrong. The dealers. You see, you make your money on the streets in the United States, where you have all of the horse, the smack, the pony, you have the blow. It's being used by everyone and his brother, including a few people here at our fine institution. They are trading in dollars. But they can't put those dollars into an American bond. Hi, I've got $50 million. I go down to your local Citibank. Here you go. Boom. There's your goddamn dinner. No. They need them to go to some place that won't ask a question. That would mean that they need to turn them into pesos so they can put them into Mexican banks, where they have, oh, wow, all those pesos? Sure, senor, come on in. Yeah, let's open the back door. Back that truck up. Do you understand the game? It was a huge operation. I mean, it was insane. Turning a currency where there is a lot of government scrutiny into a currency where you don't have that problem. So, for example, the Russians will move rubles into Somali banks, but they first probably, in most cases, they would have to convert them into the local currency to do it. That's where the black market exchangers are going to come into play. They will convert them into something that won't be obvious. Rubles are a little bit too obvious. There are authorities in Russia. Mostly you don't want to do those authorities for two reasons. One is, in the better scenario, they will let this happen until once in a while they will bust someone that pisses off the ruling people, and then they'll show how tough they are by nailing some idiot to the wall. The other more likely situation is that the corruption will just be to the point where you can't, I mean, they're asking for too much of a cut on something. In some cases, they'll just want too much, and it gets to be ridiculous. Hence why the Russians finally abandoned the Somali banks a few years ago because the Somali banks were too corrupt, which is pretty shocking when you have banks that are so corrupt that even the Russians won't deal with them. Okay, anyway, so where do they move that money now? Well, it's interesting because one of the places they're moving it is right into our neighborhood down in Central America. They can move dollars in there. Why can they move dollars? Because dollars are very strong down there. In fact, matter of fact, Panama pegs to the dollar.
and we go down there, our Federal Reserve goes down there, we want to inspect your banks. And the Panamanians have a pretty good deal with it. They create two sets of books, the books that the feds of the United States go down there and see, and then another set of books that are, shall we say, a little more realistic. Okay, that's how it works. Now, if this is the kind of stuff that you don't want to get into, I fully understand, because one of the consequences of this is an interesting medical condition called death. So you might want to avoid, because if you screw it up, if you make a mistake, you can be, shall we say, an example for whoever wants to show off that they're tough on crime and tough on international crime. And or that you offend some drug lord, or you offend some Russian oligarch, or some whatever. It is a very dangerous world. I've actually had over my life maybe three or four young men ask me. They said, "I want to be a part of it. Can you set it up?" And I like these kids. I mean, I didn't want to see what was going to happen to them. So I just said, what I say in class is all story. It never really happened.
Did you set it up?
For you? Absolutely. I don't mind you die. You're annoying as hell to me. One of the interesting things, and I'm telling you a few stories before I get down to the meat of this, was that the one young man, he was so interested in getting involved in this. He was part Russian, and he had been to Russia a number of times. He thought he spoke the language better than he did, realistically. But he pushed me and pressured me to get him involved a number of times, and I finally just had to say, "Look, I never did any of this. Those were just stories I told in class to make it interesting." And he disappeared. And then a few years later, some guy showed up at my office here. Middle age, maybe 40-ish, a little on the chunky side, smooth silver hair. And he just said, came in, he said, "I am with the government. I'm with the," I believe he handed me a card that said United States Treasury. He said, "We've had an application from a young man," and he named the fellow, and I recognized the name. It was this kid. He was applying for a job with the U.S. Treasury. And he asked me questions, the ones that you don't want to ask, that were kind of off-the-record kinds of things about the young man. And I gave him a good story because I wanted to see him get a decent job. But along the way, it finally occurred to me. And we finished our conversation. I said, "How many different cards do you have in your wallet?" He said, 8. And we shook hands and he left. Do you understand? Do you get it? He had cards from 8 different agencies. He could give anyone one of them, and it looked believable, and you just went on with the conversation. That wasn't what he was. He was an NOC. He was a non-official company man, and he was giving me the card just to bluff it out so that they could get the information from different people, idiots. He figured I was a stupid professor. I'd spill whatever I knew about the kid, but this was actually a company job. He was applying for a job, as it turned out, with the CIA, and they were going to task him to work for the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA. So, you can get into it. What's happened to him since then? He sent me one last very cryptic message, got the dream job, "Know what you used to do, thank you for getting me involved." That was all there was to it. And I've never heard from him since. And he, for all I know, he's dead now. He wasn't the brightest kid I ever met, but then again, he did have some things that Russians like. Okay, so this is the background. This is definitely has a clean part to it. You can get into a bank and do interbank exchange rate stuff. You can do that your whole life, and you will never cross into bad territory. But if you do cross into it, there are two things that will keep you there. One is that it is exciting. You feel like your life is different. you think, my God, this is like what you might see in a movie or something like that. And then the other part of it is that you will have much more money than you thought you would make in your career. So there are the two attractions to it. But remember that medical condition that I advised you about. And there is no cure for dead. There's Jesus, he did it, but other than him, he didn't share his patented formula. Now, let's get on with what we're doing here. Let's talk about interventions. Direct interventions have a problem. Now, this is where what I just talked about comes into play. Direct interventions, where a country wants to get control, move its currency. Now, understand that there are, the book mentions this, and it's in the PowerPoint too. Even if you have a free float, you are going to have a sophisticated country. It's going to have limits on how far it can go outside of some bounds. And definitely within a managed exchange rate system, there will be, visually, there will be boundaries on what currencies can do. And so with direct intervention, whether it's sterile or non-sterile, it doesn't matter. It's sterilized, the book calls, or non-sterilized. You hear me use sterile and dirty. Whether it's sterile or dirty, you're going in, you're saying, we're going to do this, and this is how we're going to take care of it. We're going to handle it. There's a problem with that, though. Because there are those who would be able to take advantage of that. Let us say, and this is where I'm going to challenge you. Feel free to say, I got nothing, okay, ma'am? But let me check with you on this right now, okay? Suppose that the United States, that the United States says our currency is too strong. We are going to weaken that currency. Now, let's say that they're going to do it with a dirty intervention. In other words, the United States is going to walk in there against the euro. We're too strong. So they're going to walk in there, and they're going to buy euros with dollars. As the dollars flood in, that will weaken the dollar relative to the euro. We'll buy the euro. We'll sell the dollar, okay? We're going to do that tomorrow. What are you going to do as a speculator today?
Nothing.
You got nothing?
No.
Okay. If you know that the euro is about to go up against the dollar, wouldn't it be smart for you to buy euro contracts at a low price today for delivery down the road? Well, no, that wouldn't work, but what if you sold euros? One way or the other, do you see how you could play the game in some way so that you were betting that the euro was going to go up against the dollar? So what you would do is find some way to take advantage of that. Okay, to take advantage of that, and I said it both ways to see if you could catch which way is the right way. You know that the euro is going to appreciate against the dollar. You know that's going to happen. So you would want to say buy. Which one's going to go up in price?
Euros.
Good. And that will make the contract so that the euros that you are going to take delivery of will be at a higher value than what they were priced at the spot. Okay? So that means that down the road, you're going to make money off those euros that have appreciated in value. Follow up you on that? Okay, good. See, it wasn't quite as bad as it sounds. You have to get used to the hustle and flow of this kind of a contract, because the ultimate goal here, what will happen, though, is that as the speculators go in there and start buying those euro contracts, what that's going to do is start to drive the euro up prematurely. So when the United States intervenes to buy euros with dollars, the euro is going to get more and more expensive, and they'll have to spend more and more dollars to buy those euros to do the intervention. So it will cost the United States Treasury more money than it thought it would. Oh, we can buy 122 euros, 118 euros with $100. No, we can buy 100 euros with $118. Okay, but then suddenly the speculators come charging in there before you can do it because you announce, we're going to do this tomorrow, guys. And then all of a sudden those euros are appreciating against the dollar. So then suddenly you've got $125 buys 100 euros. $130 buys those euros. So in other words, you are going to end up paying the speculators who beat you to the finish line, and then it essentially makes your policy move much more expensive than you wanted it to be. Now, that was a dirty transaction. That was dirty, a dirty intervention. Now, let's take it if they wanted to sterilize the intervention by saying, okay, we're going to be pushing dollars into the marketplace. So that's going to drive down our interest rates, because we're going to flood the market with dollars. So if I were a smart speculator, what I would do is I would sell those contracts and take the dollars and I would put them into higher yielding treasury futures, because when the price of the treasuries, when the yields on the treasuries dropped, I would be delivering treasuries at a higher yield than the yield was at the beginning. And you're looking at me like, and the wheels on the bus go round and round. You just have to think about it over and over again, and eventually it comes to you. All you have to do is say, how do I make money off this? If I know something is going to happen tomorrow, okay, how do I make it money off it today? Okay? So, if there's a run on toilet paper, you know that there's going to be a toilet paper shortage. Wouldn't you buy toilet paper today and then sell it to all the suckers out there when the price of toilet paper went up so much? Yes. You would take control of the asset at its cheaper value so that you could sell it later at its higher value. Think about it just from a pure greed standpoint. Okay? That's how you have to think about this. So the problem is that if it's a sterile intervention, if it's dirty, in other words, a country is simply going to affect its currency in the foreign exchange markets. You've got one side you can make money off from. But if it's going to try to sterilize it by doing something domestically to counterbalance it, you can make money on the other side of the deal too. Okay? So in the case of the toilet paper, you know that the price of toilet paper is going to go through the roof. So you buy a bunch of it now to sell to people later. Okay, so now you have that toilet paper in your hands. You've got the whole garage filled with Charmin. The extra soft is really great. You know that one with the never get the one with lotion. That stuff is weird as hell. I mean, what the hell? What were they thinking? Okay, so you got all this toilet paper in the garage. Well, now you know that what the grocery stores are going to do is they're going to say, OMG, we're going to have a shortage of toilet paper. Is there anyone out there who has toilet paper? You say, I do. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll make a deal with you. I will sell you as much as you need at this somewhat higher price so that you can screw over the consumers too by jacking up the price of it. Okay, so you can make money off both sides. That would be a non-sterile trick. The sterile would be just buying the toilet paper before the price went up. The non-sterile. The sterile version would be that when the grocery stores tried to correct the situation, you would be there to take care of that side of the contract as well. That's kind of a weird example. But anyway, you get kind of the message. There is a point to what I'm doing here that's very practical for you, because I'm going to show you something that I will expect you to know on the exam. Okay. Now, the next thing is, direct interventions, yes, we do them, but the problem is we know the consequence. Speculators are going to get in front of us. They are going to try to jump our gun if it's a direct. In other words, we're going to enter foreign exchange markets and exchange our currency for another currency. That is direct. We're going to go in there. Whether it's dirty or non-sterile or sterile, that's irrelevant. It's a direct intervention, okay? So now we have to go to indirect interventions where we would be affecting the factors that affect the exchange rate. That would be indirect. A good example would be, okay, we really want to have our exports get cheaper. We want to boost our export industry. Well, in order to do that, we need to make the dollar cheaper. A direct intervention would be to buy euros and flood the market with dollars, okay? An indirect would be, let's lower our interest rates domestically. That will make the dollar cheaper. The price of dollars, the interest rate. So we could indirectly cause our dollar to get cheaper and therefore our stuff in other countries to get cheaper by indirectly affecting that value of the dollar by lowering our domestic interest rates. That would be an indirect intervention. Now, I'm going to put some up here on the board. And this is one that was from the chapter previously, but I want to remind you of it. The exchange rate is a function of those variables right there, or those parameters, however you want to say. One of them is differential inflation rate. So in other words, if I wanted to make the dollar cheaper, I would increase our inflation rate. Is that rain or what the hell is that? Is that wind? For God's sake.
It was really windy on the walk here.
Well, yeah, I know. My mask got torn off and I'm chasing my butt down the road. Yeah, here, come back here. That's the only one I've got today. That's too steady. That's more... Okay. I was going to say, that's more like that one you have right before the apocalypse begins. And here I am talking about international trade. And that could happen. Okay. We could increase our inflation rate. That would make our currency get cheaper against other currencies. That would make our exports to other countries be cheaper in those other countries. That would be one way we could do it. Okay? Good news. That's okay. So in other words, if I were to say on a test, let's say, and I'm not saying I'm going to do this, but I am saying that I am going to do this. Oh, damn, I better write here. Something like this. Suppose that I said the United States wants to weaken its currency, and then I would give a matching. Match each of these with whether that would cause the currency to appreciate or depreciate, and a plus or a minus. So the United States increases its inflation rate relative to Europe. That would be a minus because that would cause our currency to depreciate against the euro. Let me say that again. Make sure that you know these because it's a plus and minus matching. I would list these factors. And then I would say match it with a plus or a minus given that we want to depreciate the currency or appreciate, whichever one. Okay? So it's just match to this list here. What is that? One, two, three, four, five. Match each of the five against a plus or a minus given that I want to depreciate the currency or appreciate it. One more thing. So in other words, if I say we want to depreciate the dollar... What will the effect be on the dollar if our inflation rate, we caused it to go up against the euro? That would be a minus because it depreciates the currency. The interest rate, if our interest rates go up, if we increase our interest rates, that would cause our dollar to appreciate against the euro. This one, I'm going to stick to the book, but it's a little more complicated. Suppose that we boost our national income against that of Europe. Would that cause our currency to appreciate or depreciate? Be cautious. And even if you get it wrong, I could might even understand why you would. Talk to me. There you go. That's the standard. Again, if our income appreciates against European income, our demand for foreign goods would appreciate, and that would mean that our stuff over there would get cheaper, relatively speaking. It's a kind of a complicated one. You just have to think about it. And there are a lot of reasons why I would even say, in a more advanced class, a PhD level class, I'd say, we need to talk about this one more because that income effect has two sides to it. If you remember, I don't know if they do it in microeconomics, but the income effect and the substitution effect both would play in here on the demand for foreign goods. You might say, yeah, we get more income. That means we'll want more of those European goods. And their income isn't catching up, so they will want less of our stuff. It's hard to say. But like I said, that one, the standard is, yes, if our income increases, that will mean that we will tend to want more of the European goods. And that will depreciate our currency against theirs. You're saying, wait a minute, depreciate. Yes, because what will happen is if we want more of their goods, our demand for euros would increase to buy those goods relative to our demand for dollars. And therefore, the demand for euros would go up and the dollar value would go down, so it would be a depreciation, which would be a minus on it. Let me do that one more time, just so you've got it. Okay, if our income goes up more than Europe's does, that means that we will want more European stuff. That means our demand for the European currency will increase relative to our demand for the domestic currency. Therefore, that will increase the euro against the dollar, so the dollar will depreciate against the euro. One of the funny things about this class is you notice that there isn't a whole lot of math in it, and yet this is complicated AF. You just keep thinking to yourself, this has got to be over someday. Okay, now, government controls. The government controls come into play because we could make it in our country, if we wanted to restrict the amount of imports, we could make it hard for them to sell their stuff here. Well, the health is not, there's health and safety issues and all that kind of stuff. One that's interesting is that in Europe, in the Eurozone, it is very difficult to sell anything that is GMO, genetically modified. That, they say, is a health thing. We say, bullshit. You're trying to restrict our imports of our grain and stuff like that. They also have restrictions on how much growth hormone, antibiotics you can put into beef. So we pump those cows full of that stuff every day. And they say, no, you can't import that here. So by using government controls, you can cause a change in the exports and imports. If we put a control on the imports from another country, let's say that we don't allow Russian goods to come to the United States, that is going to make it so that the demand for rubles goes down because rubles would buy the Russian stuff, and therefore the Russian ruble would depreciate, rather, the Russian ruble would appreciate against the dollar. The Russian ruble would depreciate if you're talking about dollar value. I shouldn't have said it the way I said it. The last one is the nasty one, expectations. Expectations, and I hope you have gotten that into your hearts, if you're in finance at all, is that the world is driven by expectations. what has already happened really doesn't mean a whole lot. What is happening actually is just the predicate to what is going to happen. So in other words, the long haul begins today. And today is just one point in an infinite stream of the future. So we are always looking for what is going to come tomorrow. Now the Russians said yesterday, we are pulling back. We are sending our troops home. We are not going to attack Ukraine. And so there was an immediate expectation that, yeah, boy, we showed those Russians. We stood together. And then the intelligence services started flooding the storylines overnight, both official and non-official and secret. No, they're not. They're actually building for the attack. They just finished a bridge across a river just a few miles inside of Belarus from where the attack will come from the north on Ukraine. They are actively, as of even right this minute, engaging in cyber warfare. I mean, insane stuff that they're doing. Israel is reporting that they are interfering with air traffic, civilian air traffic. We're having indications of probative attacks on our infrastructure here in the United States now. So suddenly, the story is very different. The expectations was they were going to attack. Then it was that they were not going to attack. And as of right now, oh, they're going to attack. I mean, they're getting ready. Within a few days, they're going to haul ass in there. So the expectation is going to drive the markets freaking crazy because we can't just say, well, what we decided yesterday, that's good enough for today. No, it's not. So the expectation of what is going to happen is everything. So right now, there is an expectation that the Federal Reserve is going to raise interest rates to defeat inflation. Okay? So how are the currency markets going to react to that? Expectation. They have not done it yet. Well, they kind of have, but they've not really shown any firm commitment to it. However, the markets are pretty much assured, yeah, the Fed is going to have to crack down and crack down really hard very quickly to stop inflation. So the inflation is going to be an expectation. We expect that in the short run and in the intermediate run, inflation is going to go up. That will devalue the dollar. But as the inflation, that will depreciate the dollar. I shouldn't say devalue. That will depreciate the dollar. But the expectation is that inflation will be clipped off within the next year and a half to 2 years. So that will cause the dollar out there to appreciate. So if I'm smart right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to purchase contracts, get dollars. I'm going to get dollars right now at the lower value because once they get out, we get out there, they will have appreciated and I can get those dollars. I can get delivery of dollars. I will deliver dollars that I got at a cheap price and I will be able to deliver them at a higher price. Expectations. And also the other one is, of course, if the Fed does clamp down on the money supply, that, and you'll see there's a graphic in those that I've got for that too, and I think I've also got it in the PowerPoint too. If the Fed clamps down on the money supply, very quickly interest rates are going to go up, very quickly. And the expectation will be how high will they go? Not the Fed just increased the discount rate by a quarter of a percent. That's not what we're going to react to. We're going to react to the fact that we think the Fed's probably going to pull it 6 to 8 times. That means we'll have 2% possibly increase in the interest rate over the next year. So we are going to react as if the interest rate is already up there, and so we are going to match our exchange rate in trade with an appreciation based upon 2% increase in the discount rate at the Fed. Not a quarter of a percent, which we know is about to happen if it hasn't already, it's going to increase by 2%. That's what the appreciation is right now is going to be that much. The problem with appreciating the currency by that much, appreciating our currency by that much, okay, you tell me.
What is going to happen? If the Fed cracks down and increases the interest rate, that's going to cause the dollar to appreciate. What will that do to our exports in other countries? That's right. So we will be cutting off our nose to spite our faces, because we will make it so that our export industries will be harmed by this move. Okay? So is there anything we can do to keep that from happening? Is there anything we can do to keep that from happening? Or are we just going to say, well, the export industries can go pound salt? Well, is there anything we can do? How about subsidies? Government control subsidies. We could just subsidize those industries for a while to help them out. We could also lower tariffs on our exports in those industries. So not lower our tariffs, but we would lower whatever we could as far as shipping costs, whatever we could, to, although they'll get more expensive, our stuff in Europe will get more expensive. What can we do about that? Well, that's going to hurt our industries. We could give them some checks to help them get through it. Another thing we could do is, if there's any barriers at all to those companies getting their stuff over there and selling it, we'll fix those. We'll help out there. We'll also make sure that we make special deals with countries through the United States. Hey, listen, we've got these industries that you buy stuff from. They're going to get more expensive, but what we'll do is we're going to step in here and make it so that you can get them at a better price. So in other words, Saudi Arabia wants to buy a lot of military hardware from us. Well, that's going to get more expensive if the dollar appreciates. So what we'll do is, hey, you guys over there, what we're going to do is we're going to cut a deal so that you can get a discount on. And if you order before midnight, we will sell you 30 F-35 stealth bombers for the low, low price of. They'll step in to help with these deals, to grease the wheels. Oh, we really don't like to sell to you guys in that country because you guys are a bunch of maniacs and you kill your own citizens. But you do want our stuff, and it is shiny, so you know, we'll let up for a while, let you buy some of our stuff. You see how you can use corrective interventions for this? Yeah. That is another one that is really complex. Basically, subsidies are non-sterile. The subsidies would be non-steriles. But that's not in the world of financial. That's half financial, half industrial. But absolutely, that's a non-sterile when we help them with direct subsidies to the export industries to help them through this time. It is going to get bad because those export industries of ours are great. I mean, we raise a lot of money by our companies selling stuff overseas. Everyone loves a lot of our stuff. I mean, our bombs are awesome. I mean, I've seen them in action. They'll make people pop around and run around and make funny noises like monkeys. No, we do that. That's what we do. So we don't want to hurt that. And we are going to hurt it by raising our interest rates. We have to do that to stop our inflation right now. It's just something we have to do for the time being. I don't want to overemphasize this, but yes, I do. And I've said this in 240, and it's much more important that I say it here. Here's a little 30-second lecture. Do you understand how stupid the people are who prance around in the streets talking about how they know more than government officials do and experts like you guys are becoming? It becomes an embarrassment because they couldn't possibly grasp the first 5 minutes of what I did here with you. Now, as you're working, you're struggling with it, but you're willing to engage it, and you know it's important, and you're going to live your lives in that world while they're going to go out and say, I found something on the internet that proves that all those scientists and academics and finance people and the Federal Reserve, they're all wrong. Yeah, you did. I'm sure you did. Good boy. Now, go have a cookie and shut up while we take care of the world. That's my bitch to you for the day. Let me do something here. I'm going to show you something. This is ruble and dollar. Now, is this a direct or an indirect quote? Come on, is it direct or indirect quote? Good, $1. If it's $1 USD,
That's an indirect. Okay, so in other words, we'll see that in early February, the ruble went, there at the bottom, it took 74.33 rubles to buy a dollar. By the time we get to here, it took 77 rubles. So in other words, the ruble was depreciating against the dollar because it took more rubles to buy a dollar. And then it slid back, and then it goes here. It starts to depreciate again. Do you see it? Whoa. Damn it. Let me get on that top. Oh, but wait a minute. Do you see how the ruble in the last few weeks, last week or so, has been appreciating against the dollar? Up here, it will cost 77 rubles to get a dollar. And then suddenly it's costing fewer and fewer rubles to get a dollar. Do you see it? Now, do you remember what I said would be the best way to punish the Russians? It wouldn't be to devalue their currency. It would be depreciate it. It would be to appreciate it so that their goods were more expensive in the United States. Remember how I said that? So what we would do is you would start buying rubles with dollars to make the ruble stronger and the dollar weaker against the ruble. There you go. Just what I told you they were going to do, that's what we're doing. But there's one last story to this. What we would do is we would buy rubles with dollars to strengthen the ruble to make Russian goods more expensive in the United States and other places. Follow that? And that means that their export industries will be harmed because their stuff will be more expensive in other countries, so people won't want it in other countries. Their caviar, their vodka, and everything else. But there's one last part to this story. Now, we can do this for quite a while. Just keep buying rubles with dollars to make the ruble stronger and stronger. Maybe get it down to 70 to the dollar. And that will make it very expensive. Those Russian goods will get more and more expensive in the United States. We don't even have to go to Congress for government controls, for export, and block their stuff. Because that could also trigger the GATT at The Hague. The Russians could say, they're putting import controls on our stuff, and that's illegal under GATT. All we have to do is just keep their currency getting stronger and stronger, and then their stuff gets more expensive and more expensive here, so no one buys it. But there's one more part to the story. Let's take it a year and a half down the line. Russia is still being an asshole. Putin is still the president. So what do we do then? We dumped those rubles. We bought billions of them. We dumped them right back into the market, into Russia. All those rubles. We pour them in. Hell, we just go into the streets and rain them down from the towers. Why would we do that? What would happen if all of a sudden just a massive number of rubles show up in the market? What would that cause in Russia? Yes. Hyperinflation. Spiking inflation. Out of nowhere. All those people getting all those rubles, they'd be buying everything at the stores, pushing the prices of everything up. There'd be lines, and then there would be riots. And then there might be some kind of a problem that Putin couldn't stop because there's no way he's got enough people to scoop all those rubles up off the street that we're pouring in there because we collected them over the last year and a half. That's the second half. So the expectation would be, if you think about it, that in the short run, well, the ruble is going to appreciate against the dollar. So in the long run, though, the ruble is going to drop like a rock against the dollar. That's not what's happening now, but that doesn't matter. It's the expectation that in the short run, the ruble is going to appreciate against the dollar. So we buy the rubles now, and then we sell them at a higher value later. And then later, what we're going to do is we're going to see that whole thing turn around the other way. So at that point, we sell contracts to deliver the expensive rubles at 70 to the dollar. And then when the ruble collapses back up to 90 to the dollar, we force those contracts delivering at the higher valued rubles in a world where the ruble is worthless. We just keep doing this. I promise you, you'll get the hang of it, and I won't kill you on the exam, but do understand that equation that I did there, what the effects are. And we'll go through it again on Monday and on Wednesday until you're so sick of it, you say, I am so sick of this, I guess I'll have to learn it. That's all I have for you today. Thank you for being here.